from present and the past. Every week will be an animated bash. What a cartoon! What a cartoon! Maybe a short but mostly sharp. We'll talk, we'll analyze, exploring as we go. What a cartoon!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to What a Cartoon Movie, where we clog every craggle. I'm one of your hosts, the Taco Tuesday Celebrator, Bob Mackey, and this is an audio exploration of every animated movie ever. Who else is here with me today, as always?
Henry Gilbert, recording this from a metaphorical double-decker couch with my buddy.
And this month's episode is all about The Lego Movie.
Hey, guys, I think we're about to crash into the sun.
Yeah, but it's gonna look really cool.
And yes, this month we are covering The Lego Movie, a very IP-focused animated feature that ended up being much better than anyone ever expected. And we're doing this because we wanted to do something much different than what we covered the last 4 months, which was our summer of Disney's aughts content. And we figured a podcast about this very crowd-pleasing, very non-Disney movie would really hit the spot as we're rolling into an entirely new season of the year.
And also, it has such a 2010s feel that I think is a nice opposite to the around 9/11 feel of our whole summer of Disney films.
Yes, yes. 2014, a little cozy, a little cozier than that era and this era in some ways. But yes, we're talking about The Lego Movie this month. And yes, if you're on the free feed, you're going to hear a bit of the history of The Lego Movie. But if you want to hear the rest of the history and then the rest of the podcast, the entire movie segment to follow, you'd have to go to patreon.com/talkingsimpsons and sign up at the $10 level. You'll get the rest of this podcast. You'll get to hear all of our other What a Cartoon Movie podcasts, nearly 7 years worth of those. And you'll also get to hear all of our miniseries episodes, over 200 of those covering things like Futurama, King of the Hill, and other great adult animated sitcoms. And that is happening at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. So now that that's out of the way, I want to know what our history is with The Lego Movie. Let's start with Henry. And hey, the Lego brand in general, what's going on with you and Legos, Henry?
As a kid, I played with Legos as much as most kids did. I was certainly gifted some Lego sets, though I grew up in the era before every Lego set was branded with things I like. So I did play with like the general Robin Hood or Knights kind of Legos. Now, of course, my husband is trying to turn me into a Lego guy by gifting me Legos, including here, the Simpsons living room is a recent one he gifted me with.
Ooh, so Henry, the correct term is Legomaniac.
Oh, is that okay? Yes, he's trying to make me a Legomaniac, but I am only lightly getting into it. I have yet to buy one for myself. I haven't even started on the Daily Bugle set my husband got me like a year ago, almost a year ago now. It's just it's so huge and daunting.
Yes, we got a Seinfeld set for our wedding nearly 5 years ago. We still have to build it.
Honestly, when I watched this film, I felt called out to a degree because I was a only follow the directions type kid as opposed to the, you know, creative type, I guess, is how the film defines it. That was interesting. But then I saw this movie. I think of it as when I kind of broke my embargo of not seeing animated films in theaters that were for kids that weren't like I had like a limited Pixar exception. But for a few years, I had put kind of a pause on seeing animated movies in theaters. Like I had kind of fallen behind on it. But this had so much positive buzz about it and was directed by, written by, and starring people who were all in so many things I liked. I finally gave it the time, and then I really loved it. I remember laughing every moment in the theater, a perfect theatrical experience, seeing it in theaters.
Yes, I knew you back then, and I knew you were one of the people who were telling me, you got to see this movie, and I said, yeah, I'll see it eventually. I eventually got around to seeing it, but I was not quite convinced to see this movie in theaters.
It was a really fun theatrical experience seeing it. Like, it felt like everybody, I was watching it with a hip crowd in San Francisco. Like, it was a not child free, but light on children, I think.
Child light.
Child light.
Yeah, I mean, this is the time in which we had a battleship movie. So it took a lot of convincing for me to know that this was different than that.
Yeah, because it's such a brand. It is an IP movie. Like, it is so aggressively IP. But they successfully make that the joke of the movie. Like, it stealthily lets you laugh at a commercial by actually being funny while still delivering to you a commercial.
Mm-hmm. And my history with Legos, as a kid, I had some Legos. Legos have always been very expensive, everybody, in terms of how much toys cost right now and in the past. So I just had just a bunch of random Legos. And one of my favorite things to do as a very small child was to just constantly like build and rebuild little Lego houses while watching TV. And I assume my mom might have thought like, wow, this budding architect. But no, I'm a podcaster. Even more important to society, I would argue. So I always have an attachment with Legos. As I got older, I would get the sets here and there that you would follow the instructions and build the castle or whatever. So, but not a lot because, again, they were expensive. Do I want a Lego set or do I want a video game? Well, it was always going to come down to video games for me. So Legos, more in the earlier part of my childhood, that's when I would be playing with those. And I'm slightly jealous of younger people who grew up with Minecraft because as a kid, that's all I wanted was a video game that would just give you infinite Legos. I thought, wouldn't that be amazing if they made a Lego video game? And then if you were born, let's say, in 1995, well, you got that. You got to grow up with Minecraft. And I was like almost 30 when that game was coming out, so I barely got to dabble with it. But what I played with, I love a lot, and I wish I had the free time to have as much fun with Minecraft as people younger than me got to have.
Yeah, I've enjoyed Minecraft-like things that not unlike how I built Simpsons Legos or Marvel Comics Legos when I played Dragon Quest Builders, like that is a Minecraft game. I'm like, oh, I love this. I would have probably loved Minecraft were I a Zoomer.
Yeah, Dragon Quest Builders is great. Those two games are great. I have to play the second one. I know it's a great one too, but that does feel like Minecraft, but with Lego rules, because the things that you're building have instructions. It's like, here's what you need to put down. Here are the parts you need. Yes. Otherwise, the rest of the world is very Minecrafty.
I guess we are the Will Ferrells of that world.
You know what? He's right.
Yeah, he's right. This is why we don't put this upon our children. That's why we stayed childless to enjoy these things.
We stay childless and childish. And no, these Legos are for the serious adult collector. Get those out of your mouth.
They are highly sophisticated interlocking brick systems. Mm-hmm. Come on.
The kid doesn't understand that. It's funny. Yeah, it is funny how they are trying to tell you in this movie that Legos are for kids, but the Legos they sell you are, again, the $200 Seinfeld set,
yes,
which every kid loves. Here comes Kramer.
What child is even going to buy the, like, $800 full Death Star, you know? Like, that's not for kids.
I just saw that last night. I could not. I mean, I know Legos are expensive, but that is almost $1,000.
Yeah, I was pulling that number out of my butt. I wasn't sure exactly. I had to assume I know how much that Daily Bugle set my husband got me was in the $300 range, which is crazy. But then, Death Star, I think, is like three times the size of that.
Yeah, we're lowballing it, although I am getting the Canadian price. So it's $1,300 Canadian, which is probably like a little under $1,000 United States dollars. So,
well, I guess, boy, Lego is a European creation, I know. So maybe it's also getting hit hard in the United States with tariffs, perhaps. Not to be current.
I totally forget which country Lego is from. It's in my history, and I've already forgotten it. So I have to see if we're getting tariffs on those people. The Danish, perhaps? Well, we'll find out soon.
I want to say Denmark, but yes, I look forward to learning all of this history. I stayed away from a lot of the history, and though after we do this, I do think I'm going to put in my Blu-ray and listen to the commentary of this.
Yeah, the Blu-ray has a lot of great extras on it. And as for seeing the movie, I mentioned that Henry and other people were saying, oh, you'd love it. And I said, don't tell me what I'll love. I'll see it when I'm good and ready. And then I ended up dating Nina Matsumoto, who loves the movie, had it on Blu-ray. I probably watched it around 2019, and I thought, you know what? Everyone was right about this movie. I was a big stinko. But I've never seen the second movie as of yet. Before we record the movie segment, I think I will see the second movie just to wonder and have that question answered. What is this about? What's going on here?
Embarrassingly, I haven't seen the second movie either. I watched the next movie that followed this that isn't exactly a sequel, the Lego Batman movie, but I have yet to see the second movie of this too.
Yes, so look forward to my thoughts on that when we get to the next segment here. That we'll record like 2 weeks later. So let's talk about the history of the Lego movie. And I just want to note, we are breaking from the official corporate mandate by using the word Legos to refer to plural Lego bricks. Now, we may just say, oh, look at all the Lego on the screen, or look at all the Lego bricks. We will say Lego sometimes. And also, I'm not using the word Lego all in caps in the title of this podcast, because that has a different connotation when you're reading it as part of a larger phrase, as part of a podcast title. So I apologize to the Lego Corporation, but I have to break these laws.
You're breaking from the official stylization. That's taking me back to one of my earliest jobs in the video game press was making all of the web pages for the different game titles anytime a game title will get announced. And so I quickly learned with how many Lego games there even were in the year 2008 of like, nope, all cap Legos. You can't just write lowercase if you want to be official for the Lego Star Wars game I'm making a page for.
But then even on Wikipedia, they don't do all caps just because of the formatting is different on Wikipedia. I don't know. It's very complicated, but we don't always have to follow the corporate mandate. So yes, I sometimes will say, oh, that thing is made of Legos. Please don't get mad at me. The Lego Corporation, they're fine. They'll be okay if I brutalize their terminology, I think.
They're still the biggest company in toys. I mean, I think they'll be fine.
Yeah, have not been purchased by Disney quite yet. So I do want to talk about the history of the toy very briefly, and I'm only going to give the basics because there's a ton of documented information about the history of Lego as a brand, because no one ever bought them. They are still an independent company, and they are the stewards of their own history, and they're very proud of their own history. So there's just been a lot written about it. They've given a lot of information about the history of Lego bricks, and there's a lot out there if you want to learn about where Legos came from, Lego bricks came from, or how they changed over the years. But I'll just give the basics of this as a primer for the rest of the podcast. So yes, I was right. It was Denmark. And Lego began as a company started during the Great Depression by Danish carpenter Ole Kirk Christensen, a furniture maker who decided to expand into the world of children's toys by producing miniature versions of his usual furniture products. And I did not know this until today, but the term Lego is a contraction of the Danish phrase legot, which means play well. So Lego is a contraction of the Danish words for play well.
Oh, that's fun. That's fun. I wonder what is more famous from Denmark? Is it Hamlet or Lego?
Is IKEA from Denmark or is that Sweden? That's probably Sweden, oof, right?
Boy, yeah, that sounds sweet. I think it's Swedish meatballs they serve there. But again, it is a very American trait to be like one of those Scandinavian things. Finland, Denmark, who cares?
I'm going to go to one of those countries. They love interlocking things.
I'm looking forward to, I have a Belgium visit as well planned in my near future. Ooh. Or not. That's on our list of like, if we do France, we got to do Belgium too.
It's not just waffles and Tintin.
Though I think I will visit the Tintin Museum if they have one there.
You can get a Tintin shaped waffle somewhere at some place. So yes, this Danish guy, he starts the Lego Corporation, but Lego interlocking bricks, not a thing quite yet. And they're not an original creation either. So what we know as these interlocking brick toys were inspired by an existing toy. So this British company called Kiddycraft developed a product very similar to the iconic Lego bricks that we understand today as Legos. These bricks were sold in sets labeled like self-locking building bricks and automatic binding bricks. And these Kiddycraft creations kickstarted a new way to play thanks to advancements in injection molding technology. This is post-war stuff. We can jam plastic into molds and make so much things that will fill landfills and never disintegrate.
Yeah, the Lego, few things feel sturdier than a Lego brick. I suppose maybe that's true for the thing that predated Legos you're talking about here.
Yeah, but thanks to these advancements in injection molding, we now have plastic toys, which is like, oh, we're in the space age. Everything's made of plastic, this amazing material. Nothing can possibly go wrong if we make everything out of plastic. And now each one of us human beings on the earth has enough plastic in our bodies to make one army man.
Yes, it's true. We spent our childhoods eating Legos, and now they're filling up us with mm-hmm. them instead.
There's little Lego men just floating around inside of me right now. So talking about these Kiddycraft bricks, the predecessor to Legos, the British predecessor, these were first marketed in 1947. And by 1953, the Lego company copies this existing design with their Lego Mersten or Lego bricks. And Lego does acknowledge this theft in their official history. And it seems like Kiddycraft did not object to the Lego company copying their product. And they did not object to Lego buying the rights to the product from the heirs of the man who invented the Kiddycraft bricks. So Lego realized, like, we need to lock this down. This cannot just be a handshake agreement. And also, we want to sue people who try to make their own interlocking bricks after us. So we're going to make sure that we buy the property rights from the heirs of the estate.
That is, I should have figured the reason it's in their official history is that it is settled law and that they have paid the people who could have ever sued them for it. And then, yes, how ironic. We both know how much Lego sues other companies we're aware of for their things that are like Legos, or how much you have to, like, as a kid, you'd get toys and like, Mom, this isn't a real Lego. See, it doesn't lock in perfect kind of deal.
But even if the people have the hook hands, it's not a Lego. Does it make it a Lego?
Yeah.
So, yes, Hillary Page was the creator of the Kittycraft self-locking building bricks. Maybe he thought, it's great that more people can play with this toy I invented. How good for them. He was not maybe as business-minded as the ruthless Danish people of the Lego Corporation.
Yeah, it's he was... It's like the guy who sold off penicillin. No way, that's not as nice as the penicillin and no patent thing. That I'm being too generous here.
So here's a quote from the official LEGO history about this, which it shows you they are being upfront about this, even though it's kind of like a scandalous moment of their past that their greatest creation, the one that would define their company, is plagiarized. So, quote, in the late 1950s, the LEGO group contacts Kittycraft to ask whether they object to the LEGO brick. They do not. On the contrary, they wish the company good luck with the bricks, as they have not enjoyed much success with their product. So, seemingly, the Kittycraft bricks, not a hit in the UK, but over in Denmark, they can't stop plugging them together.
Wow, so they just go like, best of luck to you, mate. Like, we're having a dog's bollocks here with this.
Something like that. Something like that was said.
And then the Danish people replied in whatever their language is that I don't know.
Maybe it was just because it was the post-war era and they're like, God, thank God that's over. Let's all work together.
That's true. They did. The people who made that Kittycraft had probably survived a few blitzkriegs.
So yeah, that's the basic history of Lego. So by the 60s, Lego gradually phases out all of their existing non-interlocking toys. And the passing decades see many innovations and advancements in Lego technology. And if you want to know more about Legos, visit your local library or go to the Lego website, because they have a lot about the timeline of Lego, the creators of the various products, et cetera, et cetera. There are several very, very long web pages about Lego history. There's almost too much for one single podcast. So I boiled it down to the essentials here.
Yes, I would figure the Lego nerds out there are very dedicated folks who have this very well archived. And I'm not just talking about our frequent podcast guest, Brian Quinby.
Yes, now he is a real Lego maniac.
It's great. He's, his daughter went off to college. It's time to really start building Legos. It's every man's dream.
He's turning her bedroom into the Lego room, not the computer room. So let's talk about the production of the Lego movie. So the idea started where all great concepts gestate, in the minds of executives. That's right. Specifically, Dan Lin and Roy Lee, two guys at Warner Brothers who dreamed of the piles and piles of money a Lego movie could bring them. And yes, this is in a time where movies based on Transformers, G.I. Joe, and yes, like I mentioned before, Battleship are making lots of money. I forgot about the G.I. Joe movie.
And there's two of them. Like, I only know them because of pro wrestling reasons. Of like, actually, when I say two, I think there's actually three, because there's a Snake Eyes prequel film too. I'm only talking about live action G.I. Joe.
Yeah, I remember the Snake Eyes one is from the 2021. Good Lord.
Wow, man, I really thought that was a pre-pandemic movie. That, yeah, it's I saw the Transformers first Michael Bay movie. And I have not watched a full Transformers live-action film since that one.
I've only seen the riff tracks of those, and those are very good riff tracks. And also listen to the We Hate Movies podcast about all the Transformers up until... did they make new ones of those in the past 5-6 years?
The Bumblebee movie was the last live-action one, and then there was also Transformers 1, which actually was a good full CGI animated movie, which of course did much worse than even Bumblebee did. So that was always heartening to see the good one did bad at the box office.
So yes, this is a time period in which toy licensed movies are making a lot of money. Board game licensed movies. Barbie is far off in the distance, but this is the current focus. Oh, people like the toys, they'll like the movie. And I want to note that the Lego movie is the first Lego movie theatrically, but there were many Lego productions before it, none with this level of production value, obviously. So this is the first Lego movie to screen in theaters, but we first started seeing Lego movies released on video and DVD as early as 2003. So there were 8 of these before the Lego movie. And while most of them are based in the world of Bionicle, a Lego Batman movie existed before the Lego Batman movie we all know and love. So that's 2013's Lego Batman the Movie, DC Superheroes Unite. That came out before the Lego movie and before the Lego Batman movie, and I assumed it's based on the popularity of the Lego Batman games. Lego.
That is what my assumption has to be, too, because I definitely was logging Lego Batman games that were high from the Traveler Tales realm of the Lego games that started, I think, with the Star Wars ones. Yeah, the Lego Batman, that universe, I feel like Troy Baker is that Batman, I want to say, in those. But yeah, there were so many Lego. Also, it's funny that Lego resisted... unless I'm wrong, I don't remember any Lego anything in the Toy Story movies. Like they stayed out of that, unlike the other brands.
Yeah, they might have asked permission. Like in the first movie, they asked permission from Barbie, and the Barbie folks said no. But then Toy Story big hit, so Barbie was in the second movie in a big way.
Yeah. So, but meanwhile, Lego was still too big for that. But yeah, we lived through the expansion of Lego, meaning like it rebranding as. These are video games or direct-to-video things. Those 2003 direct-to-video things, that also sounds like it's in the same realm as how there were like an annual Barbie direct-to-video movie every year. Like those things must have sold so much to children born in 1995, like you were talking about.
Yeah, and throughout the aughts, the heat was really being turned up on the Lego brand, and the games have a lot of responsibility for that because the games just kept coming out. And I will say they're pretty good, although if you're not a child, you only really need to play one of them. Like, kids love these games because they're very repetitive, they're really silly, lots of slapstick, lots of collecting things. I kind of got bored after I played one of them, and my main issue is that when you're playing the games, maybe 10% of what you see is actually made out of Lego, and this movie solves that completely.
I do remember playing some of the Star Wars Legos, like, well, this is just rocks I'm walking on, or like demoing the Lego Lord of the Rings games. Though I will say from my previous games press work, when I got to interview the Traveler's Tales guys about the Sonic expansion they did for Lego Dimensions, those guys take a lot of pride in their work. They are serious game developers. These were British guys who were very excited about making Sonic levels in Lego, like, because they were guys who grew up with Sonic games, and they were the guys who added Sonic interacting with Bart and Sonic saying, like, take it, take it, take it, take it.
I think one of our patrons has posted comments about that, working on that product. Yeah, yeah. Lego Dimensions seemed very cool. It was at the end of the Toys to Life era, but I liked all the licensed properties being worked in. And finally, okay, we get an E.T. game in the 2010s. What is that like?
Yeah, that showed you the demographic they were looking at, which was men in their then early 40s, who are now in their late 40s or early 50s, who were going to buy a Back to the Future set to show their kid how cool Back to the Future and Gremlins was.
They're going to say, this is what you like now. Turn off that Coco Melon.
Yeah.
Yes, giving your children your own obsessions. Very healthy. So, yes, Lego is very hot up to this point in time. And frankly, always been very popular, but in terms of being a thing you can watch and play outside of the brick system, Lego is becoming very, very popular and prolific in these other forms of media. So now we go back to Dan Lin and Roy Lee. In 2008, Lin forms the Warner Brothers subsidiary studio Lin Pictures, now known as Rideback, where he continues working with Roy Lee on developing this project. So in case you're wondering what kind of movies Lin Pictures produced, the answer is not very good ones. But these not very good movies made a lot of money. He is most popular for producing the Sherlock Holmes movies that featured Robert Downey Jr.
I only watched the first one of those, and it was, I did not love it. Why did Sherlock Holmes have to be like, oh, he's an ass kicker who fights in underground boxing leagues?
Yeah, he's like a karate master too, and most of Lin Pictures' movies are co-productions, and their most recent release was the Lilo and Stitch remake, and they also co-produced the Aladdin remake, so they make a lot of money. They're very successful. Unfortunately, the movies suck.
Man, then it sounds like, not to skip ahead, but it sounds like they accidentally made a good one this time instead of just something that makes $1 billion.
That's what it feels like. Really, we can also thank Steve Mnuchin for this movie.
Oh, when I saw his name in there, it all came flooding back of like that. I believe that asshole isn't currently in the administration. But when I saw his name on there, I was like, right, he was in the first Trump term. Oh,
yeah. What was his deal in the first Trump administration?
he was definitely a business guy. I want to say he was in one of the economic divisions. All I remember is that he had a hot wife who made a movie that was about how she fucks other guys.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. His wife had her own like the room style vanity project, right?
Yes. Yeah. About how she cheats on him or that they seemingly have an arrangement. Seemingly. Allegedly. That was what I could infer from watching a trailer.
It is fun to see these remnants of the previous Trump administration showing up as executive producers of the Lego movie. But weirdly enough, people at Warner Brothers are skeptical about the idea of a Lego movie because their previous attempts at feature animation ended with a whimper, as we explored on previous podcasts. So their last film at Warner Animation was Looney Tunes Back in Action, and that destroyed any efforts from that point forwards.
Wow, that's so funny that I didn't, even though I saw the Warner logo on this, I wasn't even thinking, this is like us following up on another movie we've covered this year. That's so funny.
Yeah, and this is the movie that basically restarts Warner Brothers feature animation. I believe 2013 is when that studio is established while the Lego movie is in production.
Man, so it basically like laid fallow for a whole decade. I get it, too, that it's like, well, we have the Cartoon Network team, and also we've just never understood how to make money at theatrical level of animation, so why don't we just wait here at Warner?
Yeah, Warner Animation Group started in 2013, existed until 2023. I forget what it is now because Warner Brothers is a goddamn mess, and I can't keep track of any of this crap.
Right. I want to say that it then became just Warner Animation, which was also how Cartoon Network things got folded into it. And now if a production even has a Cartoon Network logo on it, it still is produced via Warner Feature Animation, and it's just labeled that, unless it's a Cartoon Network Europe production, which is really just the studio they created for Gumball.
Yeah, yeah. It's very confusing, and I always forget what goes on with Warner Brothers these days. So the producers are met with reluctance by the top brass at Warner Brothers, but one higher up, Kevin Sugihara, believes in the project, largely because these Lego video games they're publishing are making a lot of money. These are being published by Warner Brothers Games or whatever the hell that label was called. Possibly still is. Did they get rid of this too?
I believe they still own Warner Brothers Interactive. I think they still do. There was talk that they might sell it off. I think the last thing I remember reading was that they had basically just ended every project that wasn't Mortal Kombat or a DC or Lord of the Rings game. But I think Warner Brothers Interactive continues to exist. Warner Discovery just split into two companies, one the company that's supposed to continue and one that takes on all of the debt. And I believe the video game team is in the good company, not the debt company.
Yeah, it looks like they will be publishing Lego Batman Legacy of the Dark Knight next year, another Lego game, eBay Traveler's Tales.
Oh, yeah. Did you watch that trailer? It actually looked all right. I thought it looked all right.
No, yeah. No. I wasn't sure if these Lego games are I don't know what they've changed in the passing years. Last time I played one was Lego Batman in maybe like 2010.
This was the first one I checked in on a while. I didn't, even though I think I've gotten like bought on sale the Marvel ones because I thought like, oh, this will be fun to play with my husband in couch co-op, but we haven't done it yet. But the trailer for the Batman, the new Batman one they just showed, is such a full on, it's Arkham. Like it is like it has Arkham combat in it, Arkham open world. Like it is, both of us love the Arkham series that has essentially been dead. So that excites me.
That sounds fun because, Henry, you're swimming in Spider-Man. I am being starved of Batman content. The next movie won't be out until, like, Robert Pattinson is 59 years old. There's no new Batman games. Like, I guess that Caped Crusader is getting another season at some point soon, or they already renewed it, like, before the first season premiered. But it's weird to be in a world without enough Batman in it.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you know, they gave Matt Reeves too much power. That's you're getting two Superman movies of the new Superman before you get another Batman.
What happened to the world I knew? We need more Batman. So the film enters pre-production, and as we all know, one thing a movie needs is a script. So the fraternal writing duo of Dan and Kevin Hegman joined the project to figure out just what the first true Lego movie should be. And while other things they worked on, like Hotel Transylvania, released before the Lego movie, this is really their first big project in Hollywood. So Dan and Kevin Hegman, they are brothers, and apparently they worked for Dark Horse Comics for a while before moving to Los Angeles and selling a pitch to Amblin Entertainment. I don't know what this is, but this got their foot in the door at Warner Brothers, and they were just available writers. So they worked on the Ninjago series as writers and executive producers after the release of the Lego movie, and are credited with the story on the 2017 Ninjago movie, and are heavily involved with DreamWorks' Trollhunter series and movie. So that's where they ended up after writing the Lego movie. And most recently, they're the creators of the Star Trek Prodigy show, which was the first CGI Star Trek series. And even though it is for children, Star Trek fans seem to sincerely like this one.
I had heard good stuff about that. Yeah, that's it's also fun to hear that their background. I wonder if I've read their comics. If they were like doing Dark Horse stuff in the late 90s, I might have read it.
Yeah, it sounds like they were not writing scripts for comics. It sounds like they were copy editors or doing marketing and stuff. And Dark Horse is still based out of Portland, so they didn't have to move very far to get to L.A.
And that hearing about Ninjago reminds me again of, like, we have a pal who is a big-time Ninjago writer.
Yes, Glenn Lakin. And looking into Ninjago, again, this is not made for our generation. I'm just surprised to see how much Ninjago there was, because I lived through the entire first wave of older kid Lego, which was Bionicle. Bionicle came out when I was in my teens, and I thought, oh, man, what the hell is this? And now there's a whole other version of that that's also not for me.
In our mid-20s, we just look at it quizzically like, Ninjago? What is
Yes,
this?
That's what I said when I first saw it, Ninjago. Ninja go to the polls. So in 2009, Dan Lin flies to Copenhagen to pitch the Lego movie to the Lego people, and they're skeptical about how this project could further the brand, but they decided to take a chance on the idea. And this is when Phil Lord and Chris Miller are brought in, fresh off of Sony's Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. And for more on these guys, check out our episode of What a Cartoon on Clone High and our episode of What a Cartoon Movie on Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. We talk a lot about Phil Lord and Chris Miller and where they came from, where they've been, and their very interesting history in Hollywood.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of that embargo I had on seeing movies in theaters, like or seeing the animated movies in theaters, I didn't see Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs until like in the last 5 years, even though I knew the Clone High guys worked on it. But I was like, I'm OK. And even though it also starred like comedy actors I enjoy and would want to see more of. So I wasn't paying attention to their theatrical output. Same with the Hotel Transylvania, like we talked about on that podcast, yep. Until this movie.
Like the Lego movie, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs is a movie I saw late, and I also haven't seen the sequel. But I do want to see Cloudy 2 and Lego 2 at some point in the near future.
No, me too. I'll see if I can get, here I am assuming it must be streaming somewhere. Every time I assume, well, that must be streaming on one of the services I subscribe to, it never is.
Nope. And I guess currently they're working on 2027's Spider-Man Beyond the Spider-Verse, or at least, is this more of a Phil Lord thing than a Chris Miller thing?
I mean, this is going by what the behind-the-scenes heavily sourced articles had to say about Across the Spider-Verse. But it sounded like on the production of that, while there are credited directors on it who definitely were, you know, doing the director job, from the description of things, it did sound like the final guy making most of the calls was Phil Lord and that Chris Miller wasn't that involved in it. And from that description on Across the Spider-Verse, as I recall, it sounded like the film is great, but it also sounded like Phil Lord was a real bottleneck on things and would ask for things to be redone all of the time in sounds like inconvenient ways.
Yeah, it does sound like they probably made two Beyond the Spider-Verses at this point and have scrapped both of them.
Yes. Yeah, and it's like, oh yeah, this next one, like if it comes out in 3 years, I will be surprised. And I bet it'll be great. They do make great movies. I've enjoyed the Spider-Verse movies, felt like made for me, like personally for me, and I loved them both.
Oh yeah, I think they're made for me because I'm watching them thinking, wow, a Spider-Man movie I actually like. And yes, I do like the Raimi movies, but then I think, well, Spider-Man should be a cartoon at all times. I don't like when he's just a regular meat man like Tobey Maguire.
It has universal appeal in that way. Same with like how there's a million Spider-Men on it you can project yourself onto. Though now, unfortunately, the one I used to project myself onto became a dad. And I'm like, hey, Spider-Man, you're doing things I don't do.
And now I think he's like 10 years younger than you.
No, he aged up a little. Okay, he was like 38 when I was 38. Now I'm 43, and I bet he's 40 or 41.
You got to keep sending those letters in. Say, he needs to have been born in 1982. September!
September.
Please, please answer my letters. So yes, Phil Lord and Chris Miller, superstars at this point, very successful. By mid-2010, Lord and Miller are in talks to write and direct the movie, and the Lego movie is officially greenlit in November of 2011 with a $60 million budget, roughly half of what your typical animated feature costs. And the sequel ends up costing a bit more, but it's still pretty cheap. Like, the sequel's $100 million, and this is $60, and I feel like a Disney movie is like $200 to $300 million when it comes to final budget.
Seeing the production companies on this, I do think I know where some of the budget reduction came from, not using the guild. But I do think that this is done like scrappier and faster, though we'll probably get to it some other time. But the Lego Movie 2 sounded like it had so much production issues that I understand why it was double the price almost.
So, yes, they're in talks by mid-2010, and then they're signed on. And it sounds like Lord and Miller didn't keep very much of what was in the original script by the Hageman brothers, although the Hageman brothers wrote the first treatment, which is why they get the story by credit. It sounds like they kind of kept nothing. So here's a quote from Miller from an article in The Hollywood Reporter. Miller says, quote, "There were a couple of elements from the Hageman's draft that ended up in the movie. There was a pirate character that just had a head, and it was similar in spirit, but we extended it. Working on that script was a lot like building with Lego. We were taking things apart, putting pieces back a little differently, and making new things with them." So in the kindest way possible, using a Lego metaphor, they're saying we didn't like what they had and we just built our own thing.
Now, that sounds like so many Lord and Miller stories I hear is just these are positive ones. But that when they come on a project, they're like, well, this is our project now. And we're rewriting up to the very last second with every funny joke we can come up with. By the end of it, they've just replaced everything just through their process. Even if they didn't come into it, maybe they didn't even come into it with the idea of like, okay, that script, rip, rip, rip. Like, it just happened through process.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds to me, I don't know, my own speculation is they had their own idea and they didn't want to have to follow an established script because they have a very strong vision, these two guys. So they thought, okay, let's do our own thing. And then when asked about it, they're like, I guess both scripts had a pirate, maybe?
Right. They got to be nice and respectful to the guild rules of who wrote a script.
And hey, the Hagmans are doing fine. I'd be a little annoyed if the Lego movie came out with my name on it and it wasn't my story, but at the same time, I get paid for it. Yes. A lot.
Yeah, I would also, if everybody's saying what a great script this movie has, I would just be like, yes, I am a great script writer.
I made
you.
All those jokes even funnier.
Yep.
So a huge element that Lord and Miller brought to the table is something that was welcome in 2014, but very tedious today, and that is IP crossovers. So they wanted Emmett to interact with known characters. They reached out to Christopher Nolan for Batman, Zack Snyder for Superman, presumably, and J.K. Rowling to get approval for these characters. And apparently, the Star Wars stuff was a lot trickier because they had to work as fast as possible to get proper approval before Disney purchased the brand in 2012. So this was all about negotiating with existing creators and not the fact that Warner Brothers owned everything. And then I wanted to ask you about this, Henry, rather than do my own research. The rights to Superman were up in the air in the early 2010s because the heirs of Superman's creators tried to get the rights back, saying they signed a bad deal at this point in time. But Warner Brothers won that lawsuit in 2013, making the character theirs forever.
Yeah, from my memory on this, when they were alive, Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster were trying to sue and get the proper rights, which they never really could. And afterwards, their estate, their heirs, were trying to do the same. And the short version is when they made Superman, and we talk about this in the Superman Fleischer shorts, they came up with the idea and thought it would be a newspaper comic. When they couldn't sell it as a newspaper comic, they sell it to National Comics to publish. DC will later defend it as this is work for hire and we own Superman. And then they will create Superboy and Siegel and Shuster, and they'll say, well, we own Superboy though, right? And then that is a huge lawsuit in the 2000s. Superman, the same deal. That's also why the Man of Steel movie gets made around the same time as an exercising of Superman rights too.
Yeah, I mean, I wish the heirs got money and more recognition for the creators of the Superman IP, but I guess Warner Brothers won, and that's why they're able to use the character. I do want to talk about this, though, comparing the multiverse idea then to now, because I was thinking, am I just tired of this? And then I rewatched the movie last night for my just casual watch I do for the history segment. And I was thinking, no, it's not that this was more novel then, although that's part of it. I think it's used with a lighter touch here. And part of it is that you don't feel like you're watching an ad for the other characters. You don't feel like you're being shown a preview for another movie you have to watch in 8 to 10 months. It just feels like, wouldn't it be fun if ... this person showed up? And a huge part of that is, what if Batman was just in our movie? Wouldn't that be crazy if we could just write a movie and Batman shows up and he's Batman doing Batman things? You're not thinking, okay, this is a platform to launch the next Batman thing. Of course, they make the Lego Batman movie afterwards, but it's just Batman is here and we're having fun. Milhouse is here and we're having fun. And, you know, Gandalf is here, et cetera, et cetera. And then when they go to these different lands, I feel like a more cynical choice would be, no, they are going to the branded lands and we're getting all the rights. They're going to go to Star Wars land. Then they're going to go to Harry Potter land. Then they're going to go to Avatar land or whatever you want to do. I feel like by keeping it to the generic cowboy, knights, other things, they really show self-control and it feels less like you're being advertised other IP.
Yes, I think that's a big part of it, that it feels more natural and innocent instead of just like, you know, you don't feel like you're seeing a spreadsheet of this department wants this thing in it, this one does. Though, of course, we do know that, like, your research showed it. They did have to negotiate a lot of things, even internal Warner stuff. Milhouse and Michelangelo can't just show up in the same scene without permission. Like, obviously, they have to do all that. I think another reason this multiverse is more compelling than current ones is that what it doesn't do, which is what I'm very tired of in multiverses, is having the same actor everywhere. If when Emmett went to the other universes and saw himself again, but it's like, oh, this is Cowboy Emmett. This is like, that's the redundancy that is driving me crazy of the multiverses of like, oh, now it's time for Doctor Strange to meet the other version of Doctor Strange that's in this universe or that. Like, that's why it feels so repetitive.
Yeah. Here it just feels like they're doing it for the sake of making jokes. It's not to highlight a character. It's not to further a brand or to advertise another movie or project. It just feels like we're having fun. And let's see what we can get away with. And I feel like there are way more cynical versions of this. And I guess this is a springboard into something else I wanted to talk about that's partially related, because my wife and I just rewatched this movie last night, and it was the first time we watched it since we saw Barbie. And we were like, wait a minute. Barbie is just the worst version of the Lego movie. And Will Ferrell's the same guy. We're like going back and forth like, and this is the same, and that's the same. And ultimately, I think we talked about our thoughts on Barbie. I'm not as hot on it as a lot of other people, but it feels like too worshipful of the brand. And yes, the Lego movie is a commercial for Lego in a way, but it's not bowing at the altar of Lego like the Barbie movie is bowing at the altar of Barbie, having an actor play the creator, putting words in her mouth, showing her as the monolith to which all girls worship in the beginning joke. I feel like that's a way different and way more cynical approach than this movie, which is just about having fun.
I don't want to yuck yums about the Barbie movie.
I'll yuck every yum. I don't care.
But no, it's totally like when we did Lisa versus Malibu Stacy. Yes, that is. I think Rebecca Sugar on that one had a good point that it's like that it worked good as a commercial that it tricked people into thinking it wasn't one like that. Yes, the Barbie movie is so much more not that this is disrespectful of Lego, but it is a. It's playful. It is like, oh, Legos are fun. Do you remember when you did this stupid thing with your Lego? Or like, the bad guy is the guy who thinks Lego can only be one thing. Well, meanwhile, the Barbie movie is like, to properly respect Barbie, you need to put her on a pedestal.
Yeah, and then like the movie is then weirdly about Ken for a lot of the movie. I don't know. I mean, it just rubbed me the wrong way. And I know they had good intentions with the movie. I don't think they were like, we're going to make the best ad ever. I feel like you could feel the corporate presence breathing down the neck of anything creative happening in the film. Where here, it seems like Lego was very hands-off, to the point where there are some jokes that make Legos look stupid and cheap and bad. Like, one of the big jokes up front when you're first watching the movie is they're spending a lot of time and a lot of effort to make it look kind of junky.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's why this movie also feels a little like I'm wistful slightly, because it doesn't feel like as much brand management is like choking it of just like, oh, well, somebody wouldn't let you do this. Like, that right down to the Will Ferrell character, who's the same in Barbie except worse. Like, and not just because Will Ferrell's 10 years older.
I just think that's a good comparison, just to see how, in my own opinion, this is just me speaking, I feel like the Barbie movie is a less successful version of what this movie is trying to do. And I feel like I said earlier, the Lego movie often highlights the negative qualities of Lego, not a super winky way, like, oh, we all know this is silly, but in a way that's like, yeah, Legos are kind of cheap in terms of how they're made. They don't have a lot of points of articulation. Everything just looks a little goofy and silly. Nothing is ever, like, cool in the Lego world.
The fun is the limitations, while meanwhile Barbie is kind of limitless, and there's everything is a Barbie and everybody respects each other and all of that. And the problems in that movie are because our shitty real world can't match the beautiful feminist vision of what Barbie's universe is.
And if you want to defend Barbie, that's fine. But the movie made $1.5 billion, so I think it's fine. I think it's okay.
Yeah, it probably made like three times what the Lego, or at least double what the Lego movie is. I don't know what the box office
I think it might have made like 10 times what the Lego movie made. I forget.
Woo! Wow.
$1.5 billion is a lot of millions.
Yeah, that's a lot. Man, see the Minecraft movie too. See everything. Warner is doing awesome. I hate that it's doing so good with all these movies when they're being as bad as they've ever been.
They're saying everything is awesome.
Yep.
When Zaslav is part of the team, let's put him in Wizard of Oz. It's going to be fun. Yeah.
Oh, God. Oh, that every second I see of that Wizard of Oz thing seems like an abortion, an abortion on screen.
I'm thinking if only he had a brain. Am I right, folks?
Hey.
But I kid. Not really. So, yeah, Lord and Miller have a lot on their plate about this time in history. And even though they've already directed an animated film, they need an expert on hand. So they hire a guy named Chris McKay, a director and editor for both Robot Chicken and Moral Oral. And yeah, the movie is trying to fake stop motion, and it does so in a very effective way. So I can see why this art director, director of animation, I forget his title, is brought on board to say, well, here are the limitations of this animation style. Here is how to convey it by faking it with computers.
It does seem like, and I was contemplating this too with what next month's movie is going to be, but it does seem like director title here almost should be bestowed to, at least co-director, to Chris McKay, because it sounded like too that he was like the day-to-day guy making sure this thing finished.
Yeah, or like whoever headed up animation in Australia for them, because it feels like Lord and Miller, yeah, they are creative directors, but in terms of the pure animation, the things you're seeing on the screen, they're not like moving Emmett around in Maya or whatever program they're using to make this work.
Yeah, but McKay's background is great to hear. This it feels like it presages how like most Marvel movies are done by somebody who worked on Rick and Morty. This is instead a previous Adult Swim era of Robot Chicken and Moral Oral.
And it sounds like he was hired in part because Phil Lord and Christopher Miller also needed to direct 22 Jump Street during the production of this movie. And they needed somebody to oversee things while they were gone directing this movie. And here I thought, oh, I've heard these were funny, but that sequel, no one saw that, right? No, it was more popular than the original 21 Jump Street film, and it made $331 million.
Man, I didn't see 22. I saw 21, and I did like 21. I saw it later, because my husband saw it in theaters and was telling me, you like Lord and Miller, but I haven't seen this? You should see it. And it is quite a funny movie. It's annoying that Channing Tatum has a perfect body, but also can be funny.
I bet he's even good at podcasting.
I hope he stays out of that. Keep working on your Gambit impersonation and go away.
He's good at podcasting, the hardest thing to do in the world.
Everything is better when we stay together.